Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me again is Elisa Miller. She came in fourth place in the Open, and we were just talking about my favorite picture is her salute picture and how it got really creative this time around, and I really like the creative pictures. And for your information, you, Elisa, and everyone listening, we're actually going to add in, like, we got a bunch of stuff coming for the new contest, but specifically the creative pictures are something we want people to do more of, so... I think we're getting a pretty good database of like other ones to look at and ideas to come up with. So, yeah, I liked it. That was really cool.
Yeah, I really thought so too. It seems like the more contests come around, the more creative they get. I think people feel more comfortable, like they can kind of like branch out, because you don't really know what you're doing when you do it the first time, and all you have to go on is what you see others have done. So the more contests that happen and the more creativity there is, I think it just fuels even more creativity.
Well, there's only so many positions the human body can even be in, and only so many of them actually look good on camera. And then for your specific body, your left side will look different than your right, and then you'll just be in a, like, I don't know if you guys have listened to some of our pod, but me and Pilon we did a couple photo shoots and realized that we just can't do the same things. Like, certain things he looks good in, I don't look good in, and it's just... I don't know, it's just something about, I mean, we're all built out of, you know, we all have two arms and two legs, hopefully, and, you know, you can put them in different positions, but for some reason on one person's body, it just works, and on another person's body, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, no, and you're right, and the side-to-side thing really makes a difference, too. Like, my husband, Ray, he was taking my pictures again this time, and it was obvious, like, you know, looking at the shots afterwards, that I... look better. My abs look better from one angle than from another. I don't know why exactly that is, but it is.
That's like with everybody. Like, I'm sure, I guarantee every fitness model and figure athlete and bodybuilder know exactly their side. Mm-hmm. They know which arm looks better. They know which shoulder looks better. Everything. Yeah.
Yep. They know exactly how to tilt their head. They know exactly like, you know, how far back to put an arm, like all of that. Yeah.
There's no point in questioning why you look better from one side. It's just the way it is. And then just work with it.
Yep. Yeah.
It's kind of like when you walk into a room, just walk in, like shuffle in sideways on your good side. What are you doing? Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Like leave with a good impression.
Good. People, why does she always walk in the door like sideways? It's just, anyways, all right. So I'm going to let you have the floor here. So you kind of you lead me if you want.
All right. Well, I did write up a whole bunch of stuff this time as opposed to last time because I wanted to stay somewhat on topic. And like you said, you know, all of my history and everything is in the last podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to like, you know, go into all that.
No,
again.
We'll put a link on the post if anyone wants, this is your first time hearing from Elisa, you can hear her last podcast. Just click the link for her last podcast.
Cool. So I think where I wanted to start off is, just go over real quick, actually the things that I learned from my last podcast with you. I didn't realize it at the time, but having that podcast with you, it was really enlightening for me in a lot of ways. And I was able to listen back through it again, as well as just, you know, remembering what we talked about. And I even had some light bulb moments just from talking to you, which I hadn't really thought of before. Just real quickly, you know, one of them was, you know, I talked about, you know, the fact that I had hid food and that I know I wasn't doing that anymore, and I was like, you know, being, you know, open and honest with the family. But I was still hiding something, and it hadn't really occurred to me that I was doing it in the same way that I had been hiding food. I was hiding fasting from my children, and not from my husband. He knew from the very beginning what I was doing, but I was hiding from my kids because I wasn't sure, you know, whether or not they would understand. You know, I was afraid that they would maybe, especially my daughter, that I was afraid that maybe she would try to mimic me. You know, there's a lot of fear involved. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing it kind of for the right reasons. But after we spoke, I kind of realized, I was like, well, you know, I'm still hiding things about food. But I'm not hiding what I'm eating, but now I'm hiding what I'm not eating. And so I made that change also, and I kind of told them what I was doing, that I was fasting. And so now we're like, you know, a totally, we're a totally open family. They know exactly what I'm doing.
There's no hiding anything.
Yeah, I'm not hiding anything.
And well, how old are we talking?
She's just turning 9, and my son is turning 12.
All right, so they're, in your estimation, how did it go? Like, do they sort of absorb what you were saying and sort of get it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I asked my daughter if she had noticed anything. I asked both of them, and the answers I got were pretty much what I expected. My son is pretty oblivious. You know, I think he's kind of, you know, a typical boy in a lot of ways. And
he's like,
sorry,
notice what,
you know,
about
no
the way you
offense
eat? No, what makes you think I'm paying attention to how you eat?
Yeah, exactly. And my daughter is much more observant. She's kind of like, you know, spot on everything. Mm-hmm. And she, in the beginning, she said, no, you know, I didn't really notice. But then as we, like, you know, continued speaking, you know, it was obvious that she noticed, you know, that I wasn't eating breakfast or, you know, like things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had been coming up with excuses before. And I don't really know if she caught on to the excuses or not, or if she just kind of believed them.
And that didn't sit well with you. Clearly that didn't sit well with you.
Yeah. Because it is a form of
come on,
I don't
spit
know,
it
not,
out.
Not lying, but it's kind of like a little white lie. You know, it's a misrepresentation of what's really happening. And, you know, and I've always been, felt very strongly that, you know, honesty in our family is like, you know, number one priority. And then all of a sudden, you know, here was something that I just couldn't, I couldn't square it, you know, in my head.
Well, it makes sense. You're not being forthcoming with your own children. Like, I get that, like, it sort of doesn't feel right if you have to hide from those people. Like, what is it?
Yeah.
Because then you're wondering, what is it wrong to be doing it if I have to hide it?
Yeah. And there's like there was a whole lot of other stuff that kind of, like, you know, went along with that. It's something I didn't mention in the podcast, my last podcast either, is my father was an alcoholic for most of my childhood. Mm. And he was never violent. You know, he was actually a really good dad. But, you know, he used to hide alcohol. Mm. So I have this pattern of hiding in my family. And he would hide alcohol. I'd find it, like, you know, buried in a inside coat pocket, like way in back of a closet or wherever. And
you don't want to continue to cycle and pass that on, that teach your kids to hide things from their family.
Yeah, exactly. And once that I realized that and it kind of clicked in my head, I was just like, no. You know, now I have to be open. I have to, like, you know, come straight up. And in the beginning, when I had joined VI, I had actually posted a forum question, you know, to the moms, like, you know, asking, well, what do you do? Do you tell your kids or do you not tell your kids? And it really started a really good discussion. But yeah, even with all the responses, though, and all of us talking, I was still on the fence about it for, like, you know, a long time. But it was that podcast with you that kind of just, like, pushed me over, and I was just like, nope, that's it. I'm like, no more. So I'm really happy that I did that. And as far as, like, you know, my orthorexia goes, it's been a really great journey so far. I kind of did a big 180. Mm. With my diet, and while I haven't, like, you know, let go of my roots and who I am and how I am and what I believe in, I really loosened up a lot, and I think me and my family, we've just kind of had fun with it. Like, we've had Twinkie days where, you know, I think, like, you know, Hostess was going out of business or something like that, and we're like, oh, all right. And my kids didn't even know what Twinkies were, so we went and bought, like, you know, a whole bunch of different Hostess cakes and brought them in, and that was kind of our late lunch, early dinner, and salad. So, and then we had Twinkies in the house for, like, you know, 2 weeks after that. And then we've had Pop-Tarts and, like, I don't know, just, like, you know, a bunch of stuff that, you know, I would normally never, like, you know, bring into the house. Just a lot looser, you know, on the restrictions. And of course, the kids think it's great. I kind of think it's great, too, because it's freeing, you know, in a lot of ways. And then we don't have Twinkies in the house or Pop-Tarts in the house right now. Probably won't, you know, for a while. I think it's kind of out of our systems now. Mm-hmm. But I've had to go through this. I've had to go through this process where.
So is it a bit of a ritual, sort of? Like
A
not,
ritual, in which way?
well, it was a rite of passage. I don't want to say a rite of passage, but it was a
Oh.
ritualistic sort of introduction into,
Yes.
you know what I mean? It was like it had to happen in some kind of more than just,
Yes.
hey, let's stop at a grocery store and pick something up on the way.
Yes.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. There's been I put a lot of thought into certain things. And because I was really for a while
Thoughtful Twinkie
very very in
consumption versus most people, it's an afterthought.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Well, I'm just saying, like your the way you did it was like thoughtful, like to consume
Yeah.
something like a Twinkie
Yeah.
versus most people, it's a complete afterthought. It's like you did
Yes.
it the complete reverse way.
Yeah. Like we went out of our way to go and buy the Twinkies and decide which ones and how many we were going to have and in a reasonable kind of way. We weren't going to pig out on Twinkies and we were going to enjoy it and discover it and see what it was all about and all of that. And it's not like I've never had a Twinkie before. I have. I actually don't remember when I had a Twinkie before, but I know I have. Yes, that's exactly what it was. It's almost like a rite of passage. It's like something that I had to do. I was feeling very, very insecure about, I guess, my food identity, I kind of built up a certain identity for so long, and I didn't want it anymore because I was sick of it. And then, when I found VI and AGD, it was like that was the beginning of me changing. And but I so so what I so basically what I did was I cut out all information on everything. I cut out all the websites I used to go to. I didn't pick up magazines anymore. I unsubscribed from a lot of things that I used to things that I would get emails I used to always read them all and I would just ignore them. And I did that for a long time, for months. And it's only recently, within the past month or two, that I've started feeling like I've got the confidence to be able to read these things again and hear these things and be able to filter out what I like. I didn't feel I could do that before. I felt like it was too much noise and that it was going to
It could still
just
influence
really.
you, maybe.
Yeah. And I didn't want it to. So I had to entirely cut it out. And about a month and a half ago, I think I started listening to podcasts. But I felt like, now I kind of had a better handle on it and I could say, "Oh, that's nonsense." Or, "All right, yeah, I'll keep that. I'll take that." I think it was Denise in one of the forums. She had said something. Of course, I'm paraphrasing here. I can't remember exactly how she worded it, but she says, you keep the best and get rid of the rest, right? It's like you keep the good, get rid of the bad, and that's how I look at everything now. I look at it as, all right, I'm going to try to be open-minded. I'm going to listen to it, and I'm going to keep what's good and what's going to work for me. And I'm going to get rid of the rest, and it's not an all or nothing kind of deal anymore. I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater anymore.
You mean as pertains to like is this like a shift in your entire life, or I guess you're speaking specifically from diet and fitness information, or what?
Diet and fitness, nutrition. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. There's little nuggets of usefulness in a lot of most diets or most workout philosophies that get to the point of being popular and marketable start off with something of value, or at least something semi-useful, and then get blown completely out of proportion via marketing channels and people who want to need to make money off of it and all of that stuff, right? But when you like undo the layers of like nonsense and marketing claims, there is usually one or two good things you can take away from it. Like even the most extreme diet philosophies aren't, I mean, pull back from the full on assume this is your identity, we're going to save the world by eating a certain way, like all that crap. When you actually peel all away, like a lot of them have at least one or two little useful nuggets of information. Like, you know, low carb is, I think it's ridiculous when you take it to its extreme, but its conception is it's pretty obvious that North Americans eat too much refined carbohydrate right off the bat. Like that's a
Yeah.
super easy assessment to make,
Yeah.
because when you
Yeah.
look at the landscape of the food we have, 9 times out of 10, as a nutrition coach, whatever you want to call it, if all you tell people to do is back off on refined sugars and refined carbs, you're likely doing them a favor because almost everyone's overconsuming them. It's like a
Yeah.
no-brainer. So yeah, low carb, but then taking it to its extreme and actually like cutting it all the way down and labeling insulin as the enemy, yeah, it's just stupid. But so you know what I mean? Like your attitude's much healthier now because like, oh yeah, okay, so eating less refined sugar is probably a good idea. It's probably,
Yeah.
you know, you don't need to identify yourself as like the enemy of sugar, but less, you know, moderate, less better. And then same thing with like the paleo concept. I think those people have lost their minds too. But the idea of eating a little bit more fruits and vegetables and maybe some, if you can, organic meats, like less processed stuff, that's not a terrible idea because most people are overdoing the processed stuff anyways, right? So a lot of these things, but then it gets blown way out of proportion. So there, I'm kind of supporting your point of take what's smart about those concepts, but throw away the us against the them world ideology that they turn into at their extreme, because then that just now you're just becoming an extremist all over again.
Right, and it's the fear mongering, and I was very susceptible to that. I still am, and I still have to be very careful. Like I still find myself sometimes, reading something, and I can feel that little bit of fear, and it makes me anxious. I can actually feel it, start to bubble up in me,
And that's not
and
healthy.
no, it's not. And once I start feeling that, then I shut it down, and I'm like, okay, obviously now today is not a day to be reading this,
Well, fear and anxiety in this industry stem from a lack of knowledge. And I'm not suggesting you specifically have a lack of knowledge. I mean, people in general don't. I mean, if someone who's otherwise appears to be an authority says, "Eat this way because it does this to your this particular metabolic process," and then you're like, "Oh, really? Does it do that? Oh my God, should I be concerned about that?" But like most people either don't have the confidence or the credentials or the sort of they don't know to immediately question that. They're like, "Yeah, BS. Prove to me it does that." Most people are like, "Oh my God, like eating too much carbs really does like do this to my insulin." I'm like, "Really? Have you tested it? Have you like well, I don't know why anyone would just take that stuff as fact without
Oh,
testing it."
but it's kind of once you ring a bell, you can't unring it. You can't unring a bell. It's like, once you hear, because I would read stuff all the time, and I would question it, and I'd even sometimes highlight things and put little question marks, meaning to go and research it and find out. But who has the time to research every single little claim that's made?
Oh, but okay,
So,
I'll stop you right there. I'll stop you right there. Who, if it's going to cause anxiety and all of these other issues, you can't afford not to do it. You see what I'm saying? Like it's because you know what? It's chewing up your time anyways. It's chewing up your mental energy. I mean, you're going through this whole personal transformation anyways, which is chewing up effort, energy, time. Why not? I mean, if it's going to consume your mind anyways, you might as well become an expert in it versus allowing it to consume you in a negative way. The only other issue is, do you actually have the backing to become an expert, or are you doing what you think is research, but really just getting further down the marketing rabbit hole, which is a whole nother issue. That's why I think really recruit professionals, go get things tested, and then you could be like, well, I don't care what the claim is, my blood sugar is fine and my insulin is fine and my, you know, whatever your lipid profile, whatever it is that the claim is, go get it tested, validate it, because most of those claims are nonsense. You'll find out when you test yourself, it's none of it applies to you at all. And then that once you have that hard proof, my guess is that knowledge is power, and that should ease your mind, because you walk home, you know, you go back home with your proof that you're like, well, whatever that claim says, that fear monger, it doesn't apply to me because I have the proof right here that it doesn't do that to me.
And so now I'm able to read these things, and I just doesn't even faze me at all. It's like I don't even wonder about it. It's like I think before, a year ago, I would have wondered. I would have highlighted something and been like, oh, well, is that really true? Blah, blah, blah. And now it's like, I just most of the time just don't even care.
So are you more confident in your ability to be critical of it? Is there, okay, so then let's dig into this a bit if you don't mind. What is there any specific, do you feel more confident in certain areas and then a little bit more vulnerable in others? Like when you see a claim, like it can kind of get to you in one area versus, is that not a clear question?
Now my fears are more. Boy, it's a fine line. I mean, everybody is aware of the whole pink slime and issue lately, and then most recently the last mad cow, issue,
Wait,
the
what did you just
cow
say?
that.
What was the one before that?
Oh, pink slime.
No, what's that?
Oh, you don't know?
No.
Maybe it's
What
just
do you
in
mean? What do you mean,
America.
everybody? Okay, so I'm not part of everybody. What is that?
I'm sorry. I guess I was just thinking maybe everybody. Well, in ground meats, they mix in a meat product, which is kind of like the distillation of all the scraps from a carcass. And what they do is they take all the scraps and they, oh, I think it's an ammonia wash. I don't remember exactly what it is, but they wash it really well. I think it's with ammonia, and then they puree it. So it's like this pink, pureed,
Like a
totally
beef
clean
pate.
meat sludge. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they take it and they freeze it into these blocks, and then they sell it to the meat packers, and the meat packers take it and they mix it in with the ground beef as a filler, right?
Oh,
And
yeah.
yeah, and they and like legally, the package can still say natural product, no additives or whatever. But anyway, so it hit the news a little while ago, maybe a month ago, and it's causing everybody to be up in arms again, and it's one of the reasons why in the first place I had pretty much tried to only buy grass-fed meat. So there's a fear factor involved there, and of course, I've got my daughter, and I'm concerned about hormones and meat, and all of that.
Those are valid.
So,
I'm with you on a lot of that. Like quality food
yeah.
is, I mean, yes, anything goes, and that's my philosophy. But that doesn't mean don't search for quality. I mean, to me,
Right.
it's all based on budget. Like, can you afford? Do you have
Right.
the time, effort, and cash to afford grass-fed beef? If you can, knock it out. That's the like for everything free-range grass-fed. Of course, like of course that's. I'm assuming that goes without saying if that stuff's available. But then again, it comes down to your consciousness level about like, is your contribution? It becomes food becomes such a philosophical thing. Like,
It
you know,
does.
is are my actions consistent with my worldview, or am I being a hypocrite by buying one thing that it's boutique level stuff that yeah, I can do it here because I'm affluent and in affluent society, but really my actions are sort of contradictory to what's better for the greater good. And I know that's getting a little like high level philosophical, but you know, that's if you actually drill down to this, that's where a lot of these things come, these ideas come from. It's like,
Yeah,
is
right.
are my actions supporting my worldview, or am I actually a bit of a hypocrite the way I'm acting?
Right.
So I mean that
And so,
it can go all the way to that level.
yeah. So for the past 9 months or so, I kind of said, screw it, and I've just been buying regular beef and regular chicken, not so much because I was on this journey and I had to find other things, but a large part of it because of our budget also. It's we're really kind of strapped right now financially, and locally it's just really hard to find anything less than $5 a pound, and so I don't know. It gets murky. There's a lot of choices. We could go more vegetarian and less meat. I don't know. So these are the issues that I'm dealing with right now. But at least I don't have the noise from everything else kind of cluttering it as well. So that's, I think, the big difference, if that makes sense.
And also it's moments in time, right? Like you won't be in this situation forever.
Right. Yeah.
So
And
you
that's what Ray and I were talking about. We were like, well, this is just temporary. We do this, and then, once we're in a place where, we can afford to buy the organic and the grass-fed, then that's what we'll do again. So, and that's actually what we're in the process of trying to figure out right now is, all right, well, are we in this spot, where we can afford to start buying these things? So we're kind of just reevaluating all over again. But it does cause a certain amount of, tension and stress, and, well, am I doing the right thing or the wrong thing, and all of that.
Yeah, I view it as you got to work backwards from ideal to practical, right? So, if money's no issue and time and constraints, I mean, yeah, fly the stuff in from another country if it's if money's no issue and that's this exact thing you want. But if that's a little ridiculous, then work back to what's realistic. And then you would, like you said, you adjust over time. If I don't think it's bad to be what I mean what Pilon calls a food snob. Yeah, I mean go for the best food if you can afford it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yep, I agree.
All right, well
So,
what's next?
all right, I think that the next thing I want to talk about is the importance of photos. This is kind of a topic that is not just about the photos, but in as it relates to weights also and measurements. Okay. So at the end of VT3, I weighed for my pictures on the picture day 127 pounds, and my waist was 27 inches. But then I popped back up again because, I kind of went out of control and I had that rebound. And I popped back up maybe to 135. And then when I had the podcast interview with you, I think I weighed in at 134. So basically, I had my photos done, 127 pounds, 27 inch waist, podcast interview with you, popped back up to like a 20 inch waist, 28 inch waist, and about 134 pounds. Now, when I entered this contest, I really just entered just to have momentum and just to keep me going, have some focus and to have fun and just to be with the other women who were in the contest. And I had also started the reverse taper diet at the same time because it had coincided. And I really wanted to give the reverse taper my best effort. And I felt like it was important. I felt like it was kind of important to you, and important to me just to see that it really worked. And I got stuck, or at least it seemed like I got stuck for a month. My weight, I just could not get my weight consistently under 130 pounds. And on the days I would see that scale go back up to 130 pounds, I would just be a little bit beside myself. And I could feel myself starting to go a little crazy again. A little bit of a shade of how I'd felt over the summer, when I had gotten stuck before I found VI. And I really didn't think that I had a shot at placing in the contest because not much was happening, if anything. I didn't think anything was happening. And I was doubting the diet. I was one of those ones at the beginning who just had tons of questions about the reverse taper diet. I really just wanted to understand everything about it. And it's really not complex. It's really very simple, but I was kind of making it more complex than it is. And I think part of it was because I wasn't seeing what I thought I should see. So I didn't think that I had a shot at placing. And for the majority of the contest, I would blog this. I would blog, oh, I'm really not seeing this progress. I really don't think I'm going to place because my numbers were not much different from my final picture day numbers for VT3. My waist finally did drop down to 26.5 inches, which is just a half an inch below 27 inches. And my weight finally dropped below 130 pounds consistently and went down to about 125 pounds. It fluctuates. It fluctuates between 124 up to 128. And I was comparing myself. I was comparing those numbers to my VT3 numbers, which, and it's not a big difference on paper. You look at it on paper and it's like there's no change. That's the same. It's like why would I have a shot of placing? But then as time, but I kept at it, I kept plugging away. I logged fairly well for the first half of the contest, maybe. And then something happened to my computer, and I stopped logging so much. But I kept on doing what I thought, you know, I should be doing. And I wasn't even weighing for, like, you know, a large part of it. And I had weighed and measured religiously, you know, prior to that. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, after you do it for a while, after you've been, like, you know, in caloric restriction, you kind of get a sense, you know, of what your calories are. I don't really think you have to always be logging and weighing and, like, doing all of that.
Nah, that's the point. And the point's eventually you get to where you are, so you're eyeballing it now.
Yeah, yeah. And so because I was doing that and I wasn't weighing myself every day and I was just kind of eyeballing it, I really just didn't think that I was progressing. I thought I was progressing a little bit, but not enough. So, and it wasn't until I took my pictures that you could really see the visible difference. Mm. And that is where I think the importance of pictures come in, because what you see on the scale and even what your measurements are don't tell the whole story. It's just this fraction of it. And if you're just looking at it on paper, you know, you would be like, oh, you know, there was, like, no, hardly any progression at all. But the reality was that there was obviously, like, you know, stuff going on in my body. And on a day-to-day basis, you can't really see that. But when you see, you know, when you take pictures like 4 months apart or however many months apart, then it's clear and you can see it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and multiple people have mentioned this, that you have to – that's the only – that's one of the ways of becoming a bit more objective, whereas the day-to-day look in the mirror is so subjective and so recent. Like, most mm-hmm. people don't even go 24 hours without looking at themselves in the mirror, especially someone in a contest that's – I mean – The longest stretch you'll go without having any view of yourself is maybe 8 to 10 hours, maybe. But
yeah.
Throughout the day, you're going to see yourself at some point, right? Every morning you do, for sure, sort of thing. So, and you just look like yesterday. No matter how much you're changing over time, it 12 hours later, it doesn't look any different, right? So
mm-hmm.
you have to take the pictures and have to look back.
Yeah, you have to. And I'm looking at my stats right now, and you know, I'm looking at my weight, like, from January 1st all the way to now, and it's crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, there are jags, and it's all over the place, my weight. And when I was in the middle of it, like, you know, in January and the beginning of February, it just seems like, you know, my weight was just static, and it just wasn't moving anywhere. But I'm looking at it now, and you can see if there's a trend. You could see it clearly. But when you're in the middle of it, you can't really see it.
Mm-mm.
And so, you know, so my advice to, like, all the girls who are listening, who are kind of just starting out, they don't have, like, you know, all of this data, or maybe, like, you know, the girls who aren't keeping data in the first place, and you're kind of stuck in it, and you're just kind of, like, maybe seeing the same numbers. The numbers don't tell the whole story. You know, I think you got to kind of take it all in consideration. And that's why, like, you know, the scale number just really isn't as important. As long as you feel like you are going forward, and I think you kind of know if you are or you're not. Maybe you can fool yourself into thinking that that you're moving forward when you're not, but I think generally you'll kind of know.
I think what we're discovering is we're not built as humans to recognize change in ourselves over that long of a period of time.
Yeah.
Like, we're not hardwired to, like, understand We only can really conceive of or perceive of short-term changes, and that's where our sort of alarm system. So, I guess, I mean, to sort of think of where that's rooted. Like, if you're sick, like, something goes, you feel pain, it's immediate, and you're like, I got to do something immediately, right? Or if you mm-hmm. have a rash, like, it's like it happens fast, right? And you're just like, uh-oh, mm-hmm. got to do something about that right now. Or you twist a joint or an ankle, and all of a sudden it swells up, and you're watching it swell. You're like, okay, something has to happen right now because something just changed. And it's literally mm-hmm. changing over minutes or hours, like mm-hmm. a bruise. It goes, you know, there's a lot of biofeedback, visual biofeedback that's quick, like minutes or hours. But changing your physique is like days, months, and weeks. And you're just like, mm-hmm. man, something really, we don't have, like, we can't, the changes are too small for us to notice it in the acute. But we're built yeah. to notice big changes in the acute because those are the more dangerous, more serious ones, right?
Right.
So it's almost like evolutionary, there's no advantage to actually being able to perceive that in yourself that quick, that acutely. So then
yeah.
you have to, like, do all of this sort of, like, listening to people like you and be like, yeah, no, it happened. You just have to look back, and the data won't even tell you. It takes a long time. And then you look back at the pictures like, oh, yeah, something happened. but it's almost like it's hidden to us. We can't even see it until we have a history of pictures and numbers.
And you know, and your weight's gonna go up and you're gonna feel like crap and you're gonna be down on yourself and all of that. And you're gonna forget, like, you know, everything in the past that just happened. And you're gonna forget, okay, well, I am in the downward trend. And I think, you know, it's important to kind of understand that, you know, you're gonna have these ups and downs and it's gonna look crazy and to expect it. And I think if you know it's going to happen, and you're not planning for it, obviously, but nobody's perfect. You know, you're going to have these, like, you know, high eating days. But if you know you're going to have these high eating days, and you know that your scale weight is going to go up, it's
You can at least psychologically semi-prepare yourself for it.
so that you don't totally derail yourself, because it's important to get back on that horse. You know, it's important to be able to, you know, you're gonna get a lack of sleep one night and you're gonna be exhausted. And then the next day you're not gonna have, like, you know, the willpower to be able to you know, refuse that chocolate cake or whatever. And you're all of a sudden you're gonna have, like, you know, a 2,500 or 3,000 calorie day. And you're gonna feel awful. And then you're just gonna kind of feel like, oh well, you know, I've already, like, you know, screwed up, so why not just, you know, have the whole next of the week be, like, you know, a free for all week. But, you know, if you already are in the mindset that you're going to have those days, then it's easier, I think, to get over those days. And then you know, oh, you know what? I'm tired. This isn't an everyday thing. This isn't like the normal part of the pattern. I'm just going to get a good night's sleep tonight. And then 9 times out of 10, I think you're going to wake up the next morning well rested and you're going to think, huh, you know, all right, maybe it's not as bad as all that. And, you know, time to, you know, get back to brass tacks.
It's kind of like your body is, your mind is moving way quicker than your body can catch up to it. So you can perceive of and expect and imagine changes that your body just can't do as fast as you'd want them to. Now it's going to catch up. It's, if you stay consistent, it'll get there and then it'll surprise you when you see a picture. But it's just moving slower than, I guess you could view yourself and your body as two things, at least in this case, where it's just moving slower than your mind. It's kind of like your mind's running along at one speed, but your body's like, I can't keep up. You just got to give me some time to catch up to you, and you have to allow it that time. As you know, I don't like talking in the whole like homunculus like mind versus body, but in this case, it might be of benefit to view it that way. It's sort of like your body's your slower running partner, and it's just never going to keep up to you in your mind. So you have to allow it time to catch up to you.
And it makes total sense. And I think, you know, if you allow yourself that, then it I think it really helps, like, you know, in the journey.
And that's
I think
both
it helps a lot.
directions, right? Like for people who are trying to build muscle or trying to cut down fat, like no matter what it is you're trying to get your body to do, it's always going to be slower than you can imagine. Like you, because we can both imagine right now the shape we want to be in immediately, and then we can go, well, how come we haven't got there yet? So you can, it's kind of like trying to teach an adult music. It's they can conceive of a song they really want to play that's really complex, but their ability is just to hit one key, like they can't do anything yet. Whereas teaching a child how to play music, they can't even think of a big complex song. So like the one note they can play, they're happy, they're fine. But we want more than our bodies can produce, at least at the speed. All right, well, what else
And
you
that's
got?
kind of, let's see. I think that kind of goes into another one of my points, the ability to stay flexible. I'm just going to read what I wrote. It's
Sure,
easier in a
sure.
way. I've had to constantly change things up depending on the situation, holidays, etc. But not only flexible with diet, but life events. Nothing truly ever goes the way we expect or want it to. These things are all external pressures. It is tricky to not let external pressures not affect our weight if you are an emotional eater. Life has to be flexible, and you have to be willing to accept that and make changes, or it will just lead to frustration, anger, resentment, and happiness. Unhappiness. So, you know, and this is still something, it's a work in progress, and I think it's going to be a work in progress for everybody, is the ability to stay flexible. I'm flexible in certain ways, but very inflexible in others. And part of this past year and losing the weight, it's allowed me to really recognize that. And I think I am much more flexible now than I was before. Like this weight loss journey for me, it's been more than just about weight. It's been about, you know, kind of who I am, like finding myself and happiness.
Oh, yeah,
And
for sure.
I'm much, you know, I'm much happier now than I was before. My husband notices it. You know, it's fairly obvious. I think my kids notice it.
That's all this has ever been about. It's not just about, like, it's the body's kind of a surrogate to the overall thing. I mean, it's kind of needs to be there, because I think we're kidding ourselves if we can, we can't just ignore it. It's part of it, but it's one piece of the bigger picture.
And the flexibility, it's, you know, I mean, I allowed myself to get overweight because I had been inflexible in a certain way in regard to the situation with my father. And, you know, I allowed it to get at me. It was this huge external factor that I was not able to, you know, control or figure out in my life. And it was just this period of time where I just kind of, like, you know, allowed myself to get out of control. So flexibility for me, it means being able to deal with life events and not get derailed in a bad food kind of way by eating too much. And you know, and you're going to eat too much when things are stressing you. It's just natural. Like what I was talking about before, it's like, you know, you're going to have to kind of expect that things are going to happen. You're going to be in school. You're going to be stressed. You're going to not have sleep. You're going to eat too much. But, you know, if you have the flexibility to be able to recognize that and kind of put it in perspective and then get back to what you were doing before, that's key. That's really, really important. But, you know, there's always going to be stuff in life that's going to derail you.
Yeah, and the idea is how far off the tracks do you go and how quickly can you get it back?
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, some people it's going to be quicker than others. And I haven't had, like, you know, something huge happen to me, you know, like what happened to my father. So I don't know how I'm going to react if something, like, you know, really catastrophic happens. But the longer, the more, but things do happen, like, you know, just little things. And I think the more I can deal with these little things and be flexible about them, like us moving to Guam, for example, you know, I had to really kind of, like, you know, work at that to kind of get my head around that. And then recently, like, Ray and I had a stressful issue in regard to his job. And we actually flew through that with flying colors, believe it or not. It lasted 1 week. It was like 1 week of, like, you know, high stress. But, you know, we were flexible with it. And we were able to, like, think, all right, well, what if this does happen? Then maybe it's not the worst thing in the world. Whereas maybe at one time in my life I would have thought, oh my God, this is the worst thing in the world. I just need to eat. You know, I just need to get through it with food.
The one thing that fits into all of this that I've come to realize, at least for myself, is that it's almost nothing really. It's always going to be okay if you actually really stop and really think your way through it. And now that I'm getting real sort of high-level philosophical here, your whole life's going to be okay. Like, it's it's just
–
don't know what people are worried about or what they're – it doesn't – like, so many things can go wrong, but in the end, you're still going to live a certain length of time, and all that there's left is the memories and the time spent. Like, that's all that there is. So
that's exactly all that there is. And I think, you know, when my father died, I was there with him when he died. And I think that it had such a huge effect on me because it all came crashing down on me that that's exactly the point of life, is no matter what happens in this world or to you or in this life, in the end, all that matters is, like, you know, hope and faith and love
and it's
memories.
It's time spent. That's all it was.
And time spent.
Yeah,
because
after you go
and, like,
to...
not everything else is extraneous. Nothing else matters.
Yeah, and then you look back and you're like, what the hell was I stressed about? Like, the worst thing you can do is have a projection of how life is supposed to be and then not achieve it. That's the you're really setting yourself up for failure if you're like, my life has to be this way and I have to get there in an exact pattern. It's not like that. Like, it's
right. And the more you hang on to that, then the worse it is. Like, you know, like when my father got sick and it totally derailed what I thought my future was going to be, and I hung on to that for years.
Yeah,
and
even though there was no way to, like, make it happen the way you wanted it, you got to be. I mean, it does come back to flexibility. Otherwise, you're going to miss out on years of enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to, You might even resent your own life. You know, I mean, that's, you don't want that to happen either.
Yeah, acceptance and flexibility. And maybe I'm terming flexibility in a way that flexibility shouldn't be termed. I don't know, but that's what it means to me.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it really just it all. I know we're not even talking about diet and fitness anymore, but that's kind of all of it comes back to that. It's.
It does. I find so much of this, like everything I've gone through this past, year with the weight loss, it all comes back to weight. And it's not as simple or as linear or as like one-dimensional as you think it is. Like, when you start on your weight loss journey, you think, oh, all I need to do is just lose the weight. But it's not just about that. It's about so much more.
No,
And
all of you, I think it's the final. I think, if anything, it's just the surrogate endpoint of all this other stuff coming together. Like, all you
and
said the same
happiness.
thing, and a lot of other people are saying the same thing. I think me and her came to the conclusion that it's like your body's the tip of the iceberg that people get to see, but underneath the water is all the stuff that happened to get it there. And that's kind of all the stuff you and I are talking about right now.
And then I wrote this about happiness also. Only you can define your own happiness and what it means. The end of this process should leave you happy. And if you are not happy, then what is wrong? What else is there? We go through this to become happier than what we are now. That's what we all have in common. We were or are not happy with where we are or were at. I wasn't happy, but now I'm good. I'm happy with where I'm at. Everything from now on is icing on the cake, and I will go forward now on my own time.
And it's not a destination, it's a journey. Just so people are, like, you have to understand that.
And I never would have known that before without going through this process. I would not have understood that, and now I understand it. It's a perception, and
There's no arriving. It's just a constantly it's evolving, not arriving. Yeah, like you will consider. I mean, 10 years from now, if we're doing another call, it'll be a whole lot of new insights, a whole lot of new stuff. There's no like, you don't just get there and you're like, okay, I'm here. Like it's just constantly evolving.
Yeah, it's constant. And then even when you get there, I know that once I reach, my VI, I'm going to be learning all other things, and it's never going to be static. It's never going to be the same. There's always going to be adjusting, figuring things out, and that's part of the flexibility too, is understanding that. Because I think if you don't understand that, then you won't be able to keep it. You won't be able to stay there. And that's
No,
probably
yeah.
why a lot of people, they lose all the weight and then they gain it all back.
Oh, there's layers and layers to that. I mean, Nicola's finishing off her book, which will be coming out soon, which is about all of that stuff. And I'm in the middle of editing it, and a lot of it is, she's uncovered a lot of layers of why people who use food for anything, like emotional eaters, stress eaters, anxiety eaters, all that stuff, you can suppress that for a short amount of time just with sheer willpower and make yourself lose weight. But if you don't address those psychological and emotional problems, you'll forever go back. So it's the wound never heals. You just sort of keep replacing the Band-Aid, but the wound has to actually heal. So that's something that we'll get even. Well, we touched on a lot of it here, but that's kind of the iceberg analogy. The tip is that you see is just. A reflect it's just what's a reflection of all the other stuff going on. All right, well, we're almost at the end here. I know we could go on forever, but do you have like sort of your final words this time?
Well, I just kind of want to give a shout out to the community, and especially to Laura and Heather TS. They're the two who started out at about the same time as me. So I kind of feel like I have an extra special connection with them. And I feel like I have a connection with everybody on the community, even though I'm not as outgoing maybe as some of the other gals are. I'm not subscribed to the texting thing that's going on, right now, which I think is awesome, but I don't know, I'm a little hesitant to kind of jump in that pond.
Texting thing. There's
So
stuff going on there. I don't even know what's going on there.
Oh yeah, everybody has like texting buddies
No, right.
now. And it's awesome, everybody's really supportive and with texting each other. I don't know. I'm a bit reticent to kind of like,
No, it's not,
to
if it's
do
not your
that.
style, it's not your style, so you don't have to do it.
Yeah. But I do feel like, stronger connections to some than others, and Laura and Heather are two of those women that I do feel stronger connections to. Because we started out at the same time, and because we're still at it, and we're still like, working hard. And so my advice to whoever is starting now or who has just started is, try to nurture those connections of the women who started right around the same time as you. And because it's that bolstering, in the community, that really kind of like helps to keep you going. It keeps you motivated, kind of like, in a way holds a little bit of a fire under your feet, because now you've got some accountability. You don't want to let people down. And I think that's really important.
Well, you don't feel
I'm
alone.
not a, yeah, so you don't feel alone. I'm not a huge reach out kind of person. I'm more of a loner. And I've reached out more to, some of the women in the community than I have, to my good friends, like in my life. So, which is
Well,
kind
yeah,
of odd.
'cause everyone's on the same mission, you don't have to explain yourself.
Yeah, it's awesome,
Yeah.
and in your own life, you don't have this group of people around you who are like striving and adhering to something, for as long as like the women on the community are. So it's really great. So they're my beginning buddies, and of course, everybody else, like Roberta and Alicia and Judy and all those great people. I can't even mention everybody. Wish I could. It's kind of like the Oscars, right?
Yeah, you gotta keep
Well, I'd
going and
like to
going.
thank so and so,
Yeah.
but you can't. Let's see. Oh, some really good books that I want to mention, just because sometimes I think they get lost in the forums, and new people may not be aware of them. So the book I'm reading right now, which is awesome, I haven't finished it though, is Willpower by Roy Baumeister. And I'm learning a lot just by reading that book. Another one is Mindless Eating by Brian Wansink,
Wansing, yeah,
which is a really good one also.
I used a lot of his data in AGD.
Yeah, real, really excellent book. And just good points to take away, practical and theoretical. Then another book, which Stephanie talks about all the time, she's the one who actually brought it to my attention on the forums, is Naturally Thin by Bethany Frankel. And it's not a book I would have ever bought on my own if Steph hadn't gone on about how wonderful it was, because Bethany Frankel is probably the last person I ever would have bought a book from. She's one of the housewives of New York. And but it's it, but it's wonderful. It's just a great book, and it really helps to keep me on track. And then another one, the last one, is Volumetrics.
Oh yeah, Barbara Rolls, her stuff's good. Yeah, and AGD. I
Yeah.
mean, again, our AGD philosophy is borrowed from Barbara, like her stuff too.
Yep.
That's just
And
that should be essential reading. I guess it's my bad for not pointing out how important that one is too.
yeah, like there are some books I think that are kind of like, essential reading. And she's got Volumetrics and then the follow-up book, which has recipes in it. And that's the one I have, actually, the one with the recipes.
Well, and that's the most useful thing about her stuff is eating. For people who don't understand that, the concept behind her stuff is just to eat bigger, like the food physically is bigger with less calories, and that'll fill you up. At least you feel satisfied because it's bulkier food. It's mostly creative ways to incorporate vegetables in just about everything you eat.
Oh, you know what? And one more, there is one more thing that's important that I wanted to talk about. I can't believe that we almost forgot. I almost forgot to talk about it. Is my injuries. I have injuries, and I didn't really mention it in my last podcast. I think because we just end up talking about so much other stuff. But this is really kind of important. When I was 38, a couple years before I turned 40, I was diagnosed with arthritis in my right hip and chronic bursitis in both my shoulders, although my left shoulder is worse than my right. But it's kind of gone back and forth over my life. And I've always had pain in my arms from probably the late 20s, but at first it was referred pain, and I would just feel it in my biceps. And at first I thought that it was like I had torn a bicep muscle or something like that. And I just kind of dealt with it. But I couldn't really weight train. I would go with my husband. My husband was a big weightlifter, weight trainer when we first met. I would go with my husband to the gym, but there were like exercises I couldn't do because I would get that, like, you know, bicep pain. And then as the years progressed, it started, like, getting worse, and then it kind of progressed at my shoulder, and I was told that it was tendonitis and just lay off of it. So, you know, I'd kind of lay off of it, like, for a while, and it'd get a little bit better, but it would never go entirely away. And almost every day there would be, like, you know, some degree of pain and discomfort, like, not extreme pain, just discomfort. Mm-hmm. So then around the age of 38, around the same time that my hip got really bad, my left shoulder, I don't know what happened. I was just walking down the hallway and something happened. I reached the wrong way. I lifted my arm the wrong way. And it just totally, I was in a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting x-rays. I went to the doctor and went through physical therapy for months. Physical therapy didn't really do anything. It did help my hip a lot. And it resolved a lot of the my hip issues, although I have, like, you know, lack of range of motion in my right hip. It's, I have a restriction, and it gets, you know, creaky. It's typical arthritis. So, but I know how to deal with my hip now. That's pretty easy. My shoulders, though, were kind of freaking me out, and because, you know, I wasn't even 40, and I was having, like, you know, the severe shoulder pain. I mean, I could barely even, like, you know, turn the wheel, like, in the car. I couldn't reach behind me with my left hand to reach the seatbelt. I had to actually, like, you know, turn my body, reach with my right hand, pull the seatbelt across me, because it was like the, I had no, there was a huge restriction in my shoulder. It's like your shoulder joint is kind of like a fulcrum and a lever, but I could not raise my arm up above a certain point without, like, experiencing, like, you know, a lot of pain. And I couldn't even lift, like, you know, a carton of milk out of the fridge without pain. I had to sleep on my back. I couldn't sleep on my side. It was bad, like, you know, severe pain every day. So finally, because the physical therapy wasn't working, I went to a specialist, an orthopedic surgeon, mm-hmm. and they did an MRI and all of that, and he pretty much said that it was anatomical in nature, that it was inevitable that this would happen, that I happened to have ligaments that run closer, I think, to my bursa than usual, mm-hmm. And that's what the pain had been this whole time. It was my bicep pain. It was referred pain from the shoulder. That's really typical. And he said it didn't matter what I did. It didn't matter if I lost weight. Physical therapy wasn't seeming to help, so he said, you know, it probably wouldn't help in the future, and that, you know, if as long as I was willing to deal with it, I was fine, but at some point, you know, I'd probably want to consider surgery. Mm. So, you know, so I kind of just dealt with it for a while after that. And then about a year and a half ago, after we had moved here to Virginia Beach, I increased my water intake, and all of a sudden my shoulder seemed to be feeling a little bit better. Mm. Now, you know, this is just, you know, a correlation. I can't really say it's a causation, but it seems like, you know, that maybe I had been just extremely dehydrated. So I started drinking, like, you know, 2 quarts of water a day, and that's kind of like how I am now. And then, you know, after I found VI and I lost the majority of the weight, it's been very gradual. But my shoulder now, I can go through the day now and I hardly have any pain at all, if any at all. Like, I can go through a whole day and not even think about my shoulders, which is really amazing. Because a year ago, that was not the case. And, like, you know, every day I'd be thinking about my shoulders because there would be some degree of discomfort or pain. But how this relates to VI and the exercises is that when I started, I was at, like, almost zero weights. And even now, I'm very up and down with the weights that I choose. And I am super light lifter. I am not like, you know, some of the other women who are following VI. My upper body, I cannot do above, like, 5 or 8 pounds for presses and kickbacks and, you know, those things. I have to be very, very careful. And I'll do, like, a set of one weight, and I'll kind of, like, you know, feel it, engage it, and then if it feels like, you know, there's discomfort or there's pain, I'll drop down to, like, 3 pounds even. And that's kind of where I am now. But kind of like, you know, weight on paper, like, you know, when you see the trend, you know, over time, I can see that the trend of my shoulders is getting better and better, and I can see that the trend of me doing higher weights is getting better and better, but it's extremely slow.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely slow process. Mm-hmm. And I guess my point is that, you know, you work around your injuries, you do what you can, you know, and if you're even doing the band, you need to be very, if you have injuries, you need to be very, very careful and conscious of what you're doing. And if it feels like, you know, you've got pain, you know, drop right back down. And you're going to feel like, oh, my goodness, like, you know, I'm not progressing. But look at my pictures. I mean, you know, look at my pictures from VT3 to VT4. And even with the fact that I'm doing, like, you know, these little weight amounts, it's obviously doing something. So, you know, just to for anyone listening, you know, to not give up hope and to just do what little that you can. And,
because it's still worth it. It's still worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still worth it. It is still worth it. And I expect, like, in a year from now or 2 years from now, I will be up over 10 pounds, hopefully, like in my upper body weights. I know I will. But it's hard to not want to jump the gun, you know, and say, oh, well, because every day for me is different. Like, every day my shoulders feel different. And some days I might be able to lift a little heavier than other days. And
this is where your patience come in.
Yeah.
You have to be really patient and understand that your body, like we just said, is your slow running partner. It's going to catch up over time.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very important to be patient. Mm-hmm. And I don't even do, you know, the exercises 3 days a week like I'm supposed to be doing. Like, you know, some weeks I'll be really great and I'll do it three times a week, and other weeks, you know, I'll just be like once a week. I take certain NSAIDs, you know, also to kind of like help out. But, you know, I'm very judicious with my use of them. If it feels like, you know, my shoulders are getting inflamed, then I'll kind of back off and I'll put more time in between the exercises and I'll like take NSAIDs to get the inflammation down. Because I think that's really key. And it's something I didn't understand before also, that, you know, you can't work through inflammation.
No, there's certain points where, I mean, there's certain points where you do need to seek out help and I put every practitioner I have and professional I have to use. I mean, I'm getting my therapist to write Nicola, my psychotherapist, is writing us a book. And then my physical therapist, he's fantastic. He's writing us a book too.
And I can't wait to read that book. I read about it.
It's going to be good. He's fantastic. I think he's, between the two of them, I think everyone's just going to find me of no value. They're just going to use them instead.
Well, it's like, you know, what you said in one of your last podcasts about, like, you know, the muscle imbalance side to side. And I've had that question for years. Like, you know, why not just train one side of the body?
Well, I'm
like,
doing that right now.
Everybody always says, you know,
I'm doing it right now.
You
got to
train both sides equally.
Yeah, I walk out of the gym after just training my right side. It's ridiculous. And because I did that DEXA, I found out I have way less mass on that side. So I got to, like, visually you probably can't tell, but I can tell when I'm lifting and stuff. So, yeah, I finish every workout with an extra 10 minutes on the right side, and it's sort of silly, but I'm going back for DEXA in probably, you know, 8 weeks or something to see if it's improving. And obviously,
yeah, I don't even need to have a DEXA to know that my left side and my back muscles, because I'm pretty sure I understand now, like, what my issue is. I'm you know, 99% sure if I had a DEXA, my left back side, my muscles would be smaller than my right side, and I just don't have the muscle strength to be able to support my arm properly.
Yeah, and, you can get it back, and I'm sure Otis's techniques. That's my guy. I'm sure his techniques will help. I've never seen him miss on a diagnosis or miss on getting someone, like, massive improvements. So if it is a muscular thing, it'll work. So, and that's why I recruited him, because I'm like, you got to get this. This is too good. Like, when I went for therapy to him, I'm like, this can't stay hidden in your clinic. This has to get out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I did physical therapy for those months on my shoulders, you know, it was always like, you know, well, you got to train both sides the same. Like, you know, the exercise you do on this side, you got to do on that side. And I would always think, well, why?
Well, I mean, ultimately, like, yes, you need to
be
balanced.
I mean, it's important, yeah, but at the same time.
But if you're currently out of balance, then no, you have to do something extra on the side that needs to come up.
Yeah.
Anyways, we should probably end this at some point because it's over an hour already.
Okay.
Well, we can go on forever, but I just at some point we have to stop.
All right. Well, I think maybe this is a good point to stop. I'm not going to be entering any more contests, by the way. I think like this is my last one.
No. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm ready to kind of just like, you know, go on my own now. I'm kind of done with the contest.
Maintenance mode, it's, right? Maintenance mode.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still had more to go. Once I got down below 130, for some reason 130 was my do or die kind of, not do or die kind of weight, but I don't know, it's something mentally released in me once I hit 130 and I haven't seen that number again. And I was able to just kind of like, you know, relax and kind of let go.
Good.
and not stress about it anymore. And now it's like, and anything now is just icing on the cake, you know? And then the cherry on top is going to be when I reach VI. So, and I'm not always going to have that cherry, you know?
Well,
let's
do a podcast when you get there.
Yeah, all right.
All right, well, then that's it.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so, well, congrats for placing again in the contest. And for Lisa Miller, I'm John Barber, and that's your Venus Index podcast.